That's our budget.
That's pretty much all they let us play with, too.
Yeah, well, you know, we tried to graduate up to balloon chair, but that didn't work either.
Did not. Hey, speaking of balloon chairs, here's a man that will never design one.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the customer.
Oh, if the price is right.
Right. With us in the studio today, writer, designer extraordinaire, and all-around fun guy, Barnaby Wayne Fan, one of our favorites.
And designer of things we are not allowed to talk about.
That's
so
right.
Let's not. Let's talk not. About the things we are allowed to talk about.
So is it true that your dad designed the flying flapjack?
No. My dad was a physicist.
Oh.
So he was very much an experimental scientist and loved boats. So, you know, that was his thing.
Okay.
Interesting story. When I decided to learn how to fly, you know, it was that summer between high school and college, and you remember the old $5 ride coupons that Cessna used to put out with Cessna Flight Center?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't have a driver's license, so my dad, when it was time, I was getting ready to ride public transportation to the airport, and my dad said, I'll drive you to the airport.
Right? Nice.
So we get there, and I present my coupon to go fly. He reaches into his pocket and presents his coupon to go fly.
Oh, nice.
And we actually ended up taking our flying lessons together.
Oh, cool.
That's cool. Neat.
You know, so we got to fly together for a few years. I mean, he eventually got medicaled out, but you know, we took our flying lessons together, and you know,
nice.
He got into the whole aviation.
Back then, there was no light sport. There was no ultralight.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So
we didn't have near the freedoms we have today.
Indeed,
that's a cool memory.
Yeah, you know, Eddie, you say we didn't have the freedoms today, and that's something that has really been on my mind lately. You know, because we're announcing Mosaic,
right?
I was honored. Charlie Becker asked me to be the speaker at the Home Builders Dinner last night. And, you know, I was thinking about it, and I realized we have this amazing thing here with EAA and AOPA that over the space of, like, 50-plus years, we've been able to engage constructively but relentlessly with the regulators and push the requirements back. And I don't know of anywhere else in
America. That's never happened, yeah.
Well, but you think about it, right? You start with experimental amateur built, right? And the FAA took the view that, okay, fine, go choose your adventure, take your own risk, just don't take anybody else with you, don't fall on anyone.
Right.
Right? That provided enough data, and you really, you know, the experimental work carried aviation through the 80s and 90s.
Yep.
Then we had Part 103, fat ultralights. Instead of shutting us down with the fat ultralights, once again, we're able to persuade the FAA to create light sport, bring those in from the cold. Light sport provided enough data of people flying without medicals to get basic med, and then, in the long run, to get us to Mosaic. And I think that's amazing that, you know, we've been able to, by being data-driven, look, guys, here's data. We understand
right.
that you want to keep things safe.
In an era of knee-jerk regulation.
Exactly. And so by... You know, being absolutely persistent, but polite.
Yeah.
And just keep dropping data on their desk and bringing them to Oshkosh and say, look, here's thousands of airplanes that
haven't fallen out of the sky.
And an organization that values safety and all that. And I think that is just amazing, and we should be really proud of it.
Yep.
It is a tremendous accomplishment. Nowhere else in the world has anything like this been done.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, how other countries view Mosaic and our...
I mean, we'll see. You know, I mean, it depends where you go in the world. I mean, I went through the process with Dan Ryan, you know, because I helped Dan Ryan design the one design aerobatic airplane.
I remember those.
Well, Dan is still a very dear friend, and, you know, he and I worked together at Northrop. As a matter of fact, you know, The one design airplane, which is the DR-107, he and I used to call it the Model 605 because we used to commute together carpooling on the 605 freeway, and that's where we worked out most of the design. But
so it was napkin drawings, dashboard design session.
Yeah, well, whoever was driving was not drawing usually anyway.
Right.
But, you know, we would talk about it, you know, going to and from work, you know, and then switch gears and do things that were a bit higher performance, and then get back to doing the one design. Although, actually, I think the one design, it can actually pull more Gs than anything else we worked on.
Wow.
But, you know, Dan went through the process of getting the one design approved in England.
Okay.
And it was a long process because, you know, they have a process to get a plan approved, which has a lot of engineering reviews. It's almost like certification.
Right.
You know, so at least in England and in, I think in most of Europe, you don't have the equivalent of EAB where, you know, you have to have an inspection to make sure that the bolts are safetied and, you know, you didn't use balsa wood where you should have used spruce. But other than that, you know, here, like I said, the basic attitude is you choose your risk because you're knowledgeable, but you don't take uninformed people with them, which is why we have that lovely placard on any multi-place experimental airplane that says, passenger warning, this airplane is amateur built and does not conform to federal safety regulations for standard aircraft.
Right.
You know, choose your adventure.
But because a lot of them are built better.
Well, but the basic point is we have the freedom to do that.
Right.
And
as long as we inform our passengers and let them make that choice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
That works for me.
Oh, yeah.
So you're just speaking of designing home builds, this thing called the Bat Ray.
Okay, the Bat Ray.
First off, describe its looks. Is the name indicative of its look?
Yeah, well, the Bat Ray, well, I mean, some of us will remember the Facetmobile, my lifting body airplane that I brought here in 1994. The Bat Ray is a descendant of that. So if you're looking down on it as a planform, it's about an aspect ratio 2 Gothic Delta wing. So that means the wing leading edge is kind of curved.
Okay.
It's going to be side-by-side two-place. It's actually going to have an inverted V-tail rather than twin fins.
Ooh.
But Elevon control, Jabiru 3300 for propulsion, fixed gear. And, yeah, I've been working on it for a couple of years.
Elevon control, that sounds like a complicated linkage for a home built.
Well, it is, but, you know, I worked it out once for Facetmobile, so I can do it again.
You can do it again, right.
And actually, you know, this is an airplane that's supposed to be an exercise in simplicity, but I think the control system is going to be rather the opposite, because the airplane's going to have lots of mixers.
Right.
Because, you know, the mechanical mixer to mix pitch and roll onto the Elevons. We did that on Facetmobile.
Right.
But since it's going to have an inverted V-tail, I'm going to be mixing rudder and pitch trim onto the inverted V-tail.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to have a belly board drag brake, kind of like on the long easies.
Yeah.
But one of the cool things about a split flap far forward on a low aspect ratio wing is that actually produces a nose up pitch when you
that's different.
Extend it. But that's really good because, you know, one of the problems with tailless airplanes is that you try to trim it nose up, you're putting the Elevon's trailing edge up, which is like putting negative flap.
Right.
So you're trimming nose up for more lift while making lift go away with the Elevon's. So if I can put down a flap that pitches the nose up without costing any lift, then my Elevon trim position is further down.
Right.
But what I'm going to be using is the middle of the three control surfaces, which was the trim flap on the Facetmobile. I'm going to be mixing that with the belly board so that when I pull the flap in, the trailing edge deflects down a little bit to trim the nose up coming from the drag brake, and it's a self-trimming flap system.
Okay.
Nice.
Now, how do you work out those ratios? I mean, mixing is a game of ratios.
Well,
and
you know what's interesting? On the Facetmobile, I started out by just mixing everything one-to-one.
Okay.
But the mixer and all of the control horns had multiple holes so I could change it in flight.
And
well, not
it
in flight. Change it.
Yeah, change it in
change
flight.
Change it after test. And you know what? The airplane flew so nicely, I never moved one of those.
Oh, wow. One-to-one was good.
I may get that lucky again. I may not. I mean, I had another airplane I did, which was an ultralight, which actually had a tail where I went through four sets of aileron horns before I got the aileron differential the way I liked it and, you know, got it flying right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll do the same thing. I have wind tunnel data on it, and I've also flown an RC model. So, you know, I'll start out with what I know works from the data, mix it like that, and then set it up so we can fine-tune from there.
Okay, now you're using an inverted V, so the flying surfaces will be below fuselage centerline.
No. Imagine like a fighter like an F-22 or something like that. You know, the fins are vertical, but they're canted out.
Right.
On this airplane, there'll be very short booms, so the fins are very slightly behind the trailing edge, and they'll be canted in but above.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I've seen
It's almost like an arch bridge, if you think about it.
Right.
And I did that for three reasons. I have to confess, one of the reasons is it looks cool.
Yeah, I knew that was in there somewhere.
But it lets me do the mixing of pitch trim onto that surface, and also the two surfaces brace each other because the tips are joining.
Okay.
And I wouldn't have actually done that if I hadn't had a chance to get a wind tunnel test. I sponsored a student project at a college I work with. And I was able to get wind tunnel data on the inverted V-tail, and it worked the way I hoped it would.
Yeah.
So I made the decision
to
go with that.
Yeah, because I guess, you know, in a slightly nose-up attitude, that may not be in clean air.
Well, that's why you do the wind tunnel test.
Yeah.
And the answer is, fortunately, the shape of the vehicle directs enough good air onto the tail. You know, I would have had the same problem with conventional vertical fins.
Right.
But, you know, the wind tunnel data, and also we flew an RC model and, you know, aggressively stalled it, and, you know, it's happy, so.
RC, so many things in RC don't scale up, because the power-to-weight ratios can hide a lot of problems.
We were cruising, but here's one fascinating thing about this. When we did the wind tunnel test, there was one number that came out not what I expected, and that is the airplane was looking a little more stable than I expected. And I thought there was an error in where we had placed the balance in the model. But, you know, we checked it, and no, it was fine. And I say, how do I figure out whether this is real? Well, the RC model had a data logging system in it.
Okay.
So I was able to go back and correlate airspeed and the position of the elevons. And when I compared the stability margins from the RC model and the wind tunnel model, they were almost identical.
Wow.
And to an engineer, that is just beautiful.
Yeah.
Because when you measure the same quantity with two different pieces of apparatus that don't talk to each other at all, and you get the same answer, you know, that feels like, okay, we've arrived at
truth.
You're
validated, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Barbara. We could talk for another day.
Yeah, so, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we got to go. This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.